the best. Now, we love you to join us on ground or online at naturalnurse.com. And on ground, we have many workshops where we go out in the field and gather wild edible and medicinal plants and teach you how to make your own natural medicine, and also how to honor the plants and collect them with reverence. So you can join us on many of our plant walks. We also have trips to live with indigenous healers in areas around the world, such as the north coast of Jamaica, and that offers college credits. We have online herbal certification classes, which offers CE broker credits to nurses, midwives, chiropractors, massage therapists, acupuncturists, and dietitians. And you can join us for many of these events. Any that you're interested in, just go to naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Today, we are so happy to have as our guest Tia Rona Lodog, medical doctor, internationally recognized expert in dietary supplements and integrative medicine. In addition to her many years as a clinician and educator, Dr. Lodog has been involved in national health policy and regulatory issues, serving on advisory panels for the White House and the U.S. National Institutes of Health, and chairing two committees on dietary supplements for the U.S. Pharmacopeia. She is the author of many books, and we're going to be discussing her latest offering today called Fortify Your Life, which provides a detailed overview of an ever-changing health landscape paired with details on how to personalize your own health and nutrition. This book serves as a trusted guide down the vitamin aisle that would educate and inspire readers to find the perfect combination of nutritional supplements for their lifestyle. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Lodog.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Now, I have been fascinated by your path for many, many years because you and I actually spoke on the same panel at the American Herbalist Guild many years ago when you were an herbalist and you were just thinking of continuing in your education to become a medical doctor, which, of course, you then did. So this is a little while ago. I've been doing herbal medicine since 1964, but this might have been back in the 70s or 80s, so it was quite a while ago. And you have really mapped out a wonderful path for yourself, and we're so happy that you're sharing information now on your website, on your Facebook page, and in your new book, Fortify Your Life.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, with the many things that you have done, why did you want to focus on the topic in this particular book?
Well, Fortify Your Life is a book primarily about vitamins, minerals, and just a few of the essential supplements that I think most people should know about, probiotics, omega-3s, choline, et cetera. And the motivation actually came when my father was admitted to the hospital after his magnesium levels had plummeted to very dangerous levels, and he was experiencing severe muscle weakness, cramping, and his heart started having an arrhythmia. When he went into the hospital, his magnesium levels were found to be very low, and he was admitted to get 2 or 3 days full of magnesium by IV. What had happened, the long and short of it, was that my father had been placed on a proton pump inhibitor and just left on it for a number of years. And, of course, when you're in your 80s, and you're taking a medication like this, and your nutrition and also the way you eliminate and absorb nutrients changes with age. Nobody had bothered to follow his magnesium levels. There is an FDA warning that proton pump inhibitors can cause magnesium levels to fall dangerously low and that it should be monitored. And this wasn't the first time that I'd certainly seen this in a patient or heard about it, but it really drove home that even with my own father, he almost died from taking a purple pill because his nutrient status had become so altered. So one of the reasons for writing the book was really to point out that there are many ways in which our lives and our diets have changed over the last 100 years. There's many ways in which our food supply has changed, but also many people take medications that simply were not around 100 years ago that can also impact our nutritional status and our and more importantly, our micronutrient status. So that was the sort of underpinning for the book. I've been involved in standards and looking at safety information for dietary supplements for almost 20 years with the United States Pharmacopeia. So this is in my wheelhouse. This is what I do. But I didn't want to write an encyclopedia about every supplement on the market. I really wanted to hone in on those that are absolutely essential to life and those few that people use that there actually may be some real good reasons to take. So that was the motivation for the book.
Well, that's a lot of motivation there, Dr. Lodog.
Yeah, yeah.
But what influenced you to become involved in natural medicine? Because I think you are one of the rare practitioners that really had a focus on natural medicine long before you became a medical doctor.
Yeah. People ask me that a lot, and I'm not sure I've ever, I don't know that there was ever a point that said, you know, I'm going to focus on natural medicine. When I was a child, I wanted to be a forest ranger. So I think that sort of starts out by saying, you know, from the time I was very small, I wanted to work and live in the forest. I wanted to learn all about the plants and the animals that live there. I was a Girl Scout. I liked going on camping with Girl Scouts. My grandparents were definitely outdoors people. They ran a small little store that was sold fishing equipment and camping equipment. And so I think from the earliest time, I've always been a naturalist. I've always been somebody who was fascinated by the natural world. I was strongly attracted to biology more than chemistry. I liked looking at complex systems and more than reductionist nature of chemistry. And my grandmother, my great grandmother was a midwife, my grandmother's mother, and so I was attracted to midwifery at a young age. I think many rural people have a appreciation for using things that you can grow in your garden, simple remedies that grow around your home. My mother would pay me money to dig up dandelions in the garden, and my grandma would pay me to give her the dandelions. So I was like double dipping. My mom thought they were weeds. My grandmother thought they were food and medicine. So it's interesting how as the generations have moved along, we've sort of become further away from nature and maybe more, you know, into the cities, more inside our homes, less gardening. I do think there's a resurgence of that, so I don't know that I ever was not interested in all things nature because it has been such a major influence in my life since I was very small. I believe that even if you never took an herb for medicine, that just being out in gardens or just being out in the forest or being out in the desert, just being out in nature itself is extremely healing to the human heart.
Well, that's a beautiful way to put it. And I would say that's a lot of what you reflect, the healing to the human heart on many, many levels. And it's interesting that you shared on a physical level that your father having a situation with his heart on a physical level actually evolves your interest even more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. Heart disease is the number one killer of American men and women and is growing around the world. Actually, heart disease is being exported or developed in many nations where heart disease was quite low. But it always fascinates me that we focus a lot on, you know, the diet, which is important, even though I believe we got many things wrong with the diet. We focused a lot on saturated fat when the data has really failed to show that saturated fat really impacts heart disease in any dramatic way. That probably sugars and really refined processed strip foods are probably much worse for your heart. But But the part that fascinates me is even in conventional training today, there's still very little emphasis placed on the data or the evidence that shows that what really harms the heart is social isolation, people feeling very alone and lonely. That's more predictive of having, for a woman in particular, of having a heart attack than being obese, being diabetic, smoking, having high blood pressure. And yet we focus a lot on the physical aspects and not a lot on the social impact of just life and living and companionship and social networks and that fabric which makes us a human family and its impact on the human heart. And our language reflects this, you know. It's like when we say things like, you know, he broke my heart, you know, it felt like somebody stabbed me in the heart, she died of a broken heart. All of those really suggest that we have long understood that deep emotion, deep sadness, depression can really harm the heart. And modern evidence supports the same thing, and yet when I work with medical students, when I work with acupuncturists and when I work with chiropractors and others in interprofessional education, there's still a lot of emphasis placed on supplements. There's a lot of emphasis placed on drugs. There's a lot of emphasis placed on the physical aspect of the heart, and not near as much as I think should be on the emotional, spiritual parts of what impact our heart. Even though we have huge, huge studies now that show that isolation and depression and feelings of loneliness are really harmful to the human heart.
Yeah, measurably so. So thank you for sharing that. Now, in terms of, I have a question for you. I actually tried to look at your website for this because someone told me you said this, so we'll see if it's true now. I have you here to discuss it, and it's a very specific nutrient kind of question, and it has to do with various forms of B vitamins that are methylated. Mm-hmm. And as you know, that's kind of a big buzz, although so much of the studies that really support the use of B vitamins in terms of a nutritional supplement. Of course, food is always best, but in terms of an isolate, most of the studies have been done not on the methylated form. And from my research, it looks like the methylated form, such as methylcobalamin with B12 and the other vitamins that are now available, like the folic acid in a methylated form, it seems like they're most useful for people who actually have specific neurological problems and methylation pathway problems, while perhaps it's not what everyone should use. And someone told me that you addressed that, either in a lecture or in notes, but I haven't been able to find your statement. So how do you feel about that?
Well, you know, when I went through medical school, I certainly didn't, you know, we learned basic methylation pathways, but there was never any sort of consideration that somewhere between 15 and 30% of populations, depending upon where they come from in the world, have actual polymorphisms or abnormalities in the pathway that allow us to use things like synthetic folic acid, which is what we fortify foods with and what's found in most supplements, or B12, the cyanocobalamin, which is found in many supplements. In a country where where health professionals are already fairly deficient in nutritional knowledge, to think that we're now going to move towards testing people for MTHFR, which are these pathways, the overarching pathway that takes these synthetic forms and is able to methylate them and make them active in the body, or even some of the more natural forms not able to take these and really convert them in the body. Nobody's going to start doing this as a regular test to see who should take a methylated form. Is there a problem with taking methylfolate? Well, no. It's just the active form in the body, and if you're taking a standard amount, you know, especially if you're a woman who may get pregnant, I think this is a wise step, because how are you going to know if you're one of the 3 of 10 women that may have a problem with this. And if you are somebody who has a difficulty with a methylation pathway and you're planning on getting pregnant and you're taking a synthetic form of folic acid, it's probably not going to do you much good. This is concerning because we know that many, many women do not get adequate amounts of folate in their diet. A big study just came out in one of the public health journals looking at the fact that while neural tube defects, which is the most prevalent birth defect that can happen if a woman doesn't get enough folic acid or B12 or choline for that matter, all kind of members of this B family, that there's neural tube defects, which spina bifida, anencephaly, not having part of the skull, formed, that we were pretty stable with this for a period of time, and now we're actually seeing an uptick again in babies being born with these malformations, which are horrific, by the way. And part of this we're now seeing, Hispanic women, Latina women, still have the highest incidence of any group, and it also turns out that many Latina women have methylation problems. So them taking a synthetic form of folic acid is not going to help them if they're not able to methylate it. So for me, I think that probably in the future, especially when we're talking about reproductive-aged women, and perhaps elder people who may be more at risk for depression and mood issues, I think we're probably going to move more towards methylated folic acid and B12. There's no downside with doing so. There's not a risk of harm from taking the active form. On the other hand, there may be some risk with the folic acid that's synthetic if you're not able to methylate it and the folic acid or the B12 accumulate in your body in the non-active form, there actually may be some harm. So I think this is it's a young question. I think that we will know a lot more in the next 5 to 10 years. 70% of us that take folic acid, in food that's a synthetic that's been fortified or taken in a basic multivitamin are going to be able to do just whatever we need with it. However, for the 20 to 30% of people who can't, they don't know who they are. They don't know who they are, and so taking those vitamins is probably not going to help them. So I do think there's probably going to be a move towards methylating a few of those vitamins because I don't see routine testing, genetic testing coming up anytime soon on the...
And why not? I mean, many doctors that I know are doing it. It's fairly cost-effective.
We can't even get doctors to do a vitamin D test.
We are making progress with that, because I am a clinical instructor in the Department of Family Medicine at Stony Brook University, and I do speak all over the country, as you do. And I am finding that, especially when you can talk about a test that really can be done, it's totally non-invasive, it's strictly a swab of the buccal mucosa, it's fairly cost-effective. So it is something that is being integrated. You're right, not broadly, but it's making little inroads.
We're talking about a relatively small, with a million physicians almost in the United States, I can tell you it's a small number. And Canada, for instance, Canada has basically said as a national policy there will be no more vitamin D screening. So,
oh, my goodness.
Well, right. Wow. So, I mean, I think those of us who sort of keep up, a lot in this globally as well as in countries where there are more scarce resources, and I think this country is moving in that same direction, that it's going to be harder to order tests without a strong clinical indication. You and I may certainly want to order a test. For me, it's like vitamin D testing should just be routine. But if we're still having problems with magnesium testing in patients that are on proton pump inhibitors to prevent what happened to my father, when that is still not common, it's going to be even harder to think that it's going to be mainstream for MTHFR testing. So, yes, there are doctors that do it and certainly those who do more integrative practice, but it is not routine, and I guarantee you, I know from just our clinic here in New Mexico, we've had pushback from insurance companies on ordering some of these tests, like sending a letter, saying they're not going to pay for it. What was the medical indication and rationale for ordering it? So I think that in a country where many people live in areas where they're not going to be tested, because from a public health perspective, public health officials say this, there's no reason to mass screen the population, I think that it's going to be, why not? Why not have, in a basic prenatal multivitamin, have the methylated form of folic acid? I wouldn't understand the argument against it. There's no harm in doing it. Many of these women aren't going to be tested. And if folic acid and the active form of folic acid is so important for preventing such a horrific birth defect, why wouldn't you just do it?
That is so true.
I'm not
true.
Well, a good argument against it.
Thank you for sharing that. I totally agree. And that was an excellent explanation about methylated versus regular B vitamins, so people can be on the lookout for that. And, of course, some people can afford to read labels and perhaps choose a higher-end one where it's already incorporated, but you're certainly right, in the mainstream venues, they're not worrying about B vitamins at all, let alone methylated.
No, thank you for your input. It's true. And, you know, when I was doing the research for the book, I was doing a lot of data mining through the CDC's biochemical monitoring, you know, so they do the large NHANES study surveys, which really go and interview huge swaths of the American population in face-to-face interviews. And one of the things that we've long known is that, you know, interviews, survey instruments are not, they don't always reflect what's actually going on within the body. And in the second biochemical monitoring big national survey that the CDC did, they found that 30 million people have really frank B6 deficiency. I mean, frank deficiency. It was shocking. I mean, that's the equivalent of basically every man, woman, and child living in New York, Miami, Houston, San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, and Chicago. I mean, that is just a mind-boggling number, almost one-tenth of the population, 10%. And B6, you know, the levels of active B6 in the body, what they defined as deficiency, you know, Tufts and other research institutions would say they used even way too low of a cutoff. So the number of people who are frankly deficient is probably much greater than 30 million. But even there, and I have asked, I was at a conference, a Scripps conference on dietary supplements, had probably 600-700 clinicians, mostly doctors, that are interested in this topic and use supplements. I asked how many of them routinely check a vitamin B6 level in their patients, and one person out of 600-700 people raised their hand, and he's a doctor at Mayo who specializes in people with neurological disorders. So we had basically 699 people who'd never ordered a B6 in their life. And this is, again, one of those interesting sort of things that, you know, twice as many women were affected than men. Black people were more affected than white. And what are the symptoms of B6 deficiency? Depression, poor memory, poor concentration, irritability, and then eventually fatigue, and can contribute to anemia. Can look a lot like iron deficiency anemia, actually. This is again one of those interesting pieces when nobody knows that it's a problem, when nobody's thinking, oh gosh, this person's got depression and she's a woman and she's on oral contraceptives, she's a black woman on oral contraceptives, she's coming in with some of these issues, am I thinking B6? Because we do know oral contraceptives can lower B6 in the body. This is just another area when we look at the number of people, 18 million Americans have B12 levels low enough to cause irreversible nerve damage. 18 million people is a lot of people, most over the age of 40. So, you know, and metformin, which is a drug that we commonly use to treat type 2 diabetes, which is an effective drug for diabetes, there's no question, but it drives down B12, increases your risk of B12 deficiency by almost 2.5-fold. So, but nobody's really following B12. It's not a standard. And this is, you know, these were some of the things that when I was looking at the data and looking at really biochemical data, not survey data, not looking at dietary surveys and thinking about what people could be possibly deficient in, but actually looking at blood levels drawn from huge numbers of people across this country, it was shocking.
It was really shocking.
I'm just sitting here going, oh my goodness, 90 million deficient in vitamin D, which shouldn't surprise us ultimately, but 90 million with levels of less than 20 nanograms per mil, which is, according to the Endocrine Society, deficiency, not insufficiency, but deficiency. So when we say things like we can get everything in our diet, and we do this, and every time we do a talk, we say, obviously getting it from your food is best. Obviously getting it from your food is best. The reality is a lot of Americans are not getting what they need from their food. And so do you wait until everybody gets everything from their food, or do you say our reality is 25% of Americans eat less than one serving of fruit a day and 22% eat less than one serving of vegetables? That is not the way we're going to get healthy Americans. And by anybody's definition, those individuals are going to be deficient in various nutrients. So for me, a basic multivitamin, a very basic one, nothing really super high potency, but a basic multivitamin may be very wise, especially for people who are economically disadvantaged, people who have food insecurity, children, women who could become pregnant, pregnant women, breastfeeding women, and elders. I think those are the most vulnerable populations.
Well, thank you, Dr. Lowdog. We're going to take about a one-minute break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and I would like to remind you that we are speaking to a brilliant physician who is really a leader in the field, and we are so happy to have her on today, and that is Dr. Tiarana Lowdog, and we're talking about her latest book, which should be on your shelf, called Fortify Your Life. We will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll take a look at the soybean, its phytochemistry, and its role as a food and medicine.
It is exciting to see a resurgence in research by universities and food scientists on the role that foods play in disease prevention. Many of these institutions, such as the United Soybean Board, the American Soybean Farmers Association, and the National Cancer Institute, are busy developing designer foods, or superfoods, concentrating the essential nutrients and phytochemicals in soybeans and other foods that have potent medicinal effects. Commonly known foods which have soy in them include soy milk, a cheese-like substance called tofu, tempeh, a fermented soy protein, and tamari, a fermented soy sauce. The soybean is a rich source of many nutrients, including selenium, zinc, beta-carotene, vitamins A, C, and E, and 20 of the 22 amino acids. Soy also contains essential fatty acids.
Research on soy foods is vast and well known to health enthusiasts, although the general public and physicians in the United States may not be aware of this plethora of research. In Japan and China, however, this is not the case, as a voluminous number of scientific studies have been carried out in animals and humans. Chinese studies reveal that soy products can increase the ability, rate of activity, and number of white blood cells. Patients receiving chemotherapy and radiation can benefit from drinking soy milk, which in several studies demonstrated a protective effect on the liver and gastrointestinal system.
It is interesting to note that the British journal Lancet revealed that vegetarians and Asians who ingest high amounts of soy have the lowest rates of cancer. This is due to one of soy's constituents called genistein. This chemical is a phytoestrogen or plant estrogen, which can decrease and block the uptake of human estrogen and testosterone, as well as enhance its excretion. Like the drug tamoxifen, it competes with estrogen for uptake in the reproductive tissues. By doing so, hormone-dependent cancers like ovarian, breast, and prostate cancers may be prevented.
In conditions where there is a deficiency of hormones, such as osteoporosis and menopause, Soy isoflavones, such as genistein, can weakly mimic estrogen and reduce the severity of these problems.
So, listeners, don't count out the versatile soybean. Make it a delicious and nutritious part of your natural medicine chest.
And do be sure it's organic. And today we have as our guest Tiarana Lodog, medical doctor, internationally recognized expert in many fields, but this particular book focuses on dietary supplements and integrative medicine. We're talking about her new book, Fortify Your Life. And you did a wonderful explanation, Dr. Lodog, about why even if people think they're healthy eaters, they certainly may be needing nutritional supplements as well. Now, how do you help people decide which ones to choose? Because there are many supplements on the market. Some of them have a range, particularly in the other ingredient paragraph, which I always advise my clients to read, that actually is a long list of potential toxins, such as benzoates, dyes, all kinds of coloring agents. You know, how do we have people check that they're using something of a better quality?
Well, I think that if you wouldn't buy food with those ingredients in it, you probably shouldn't buy a supplement with them. I say that also recognizing that, you know, for some people it may be even a stretch to buy a multivitamin. You know, I've worked with, you know, if you're on SNAPs here in New Mexico, you know, food stamps, you can buy candy corn and soda pop, but you can't buy basic multivitamin for you or your child. So I'm aware of the issues around cost, and I would say that, you know, the amounts that you're getting would be quite small, and you'd have to really weigh the risk-benefit for taking a poorer quality vitamin with, like, a woman who could become pregnant, right? So you have to weigh everything, but in general, for those of us who have the money and the ability to buy a little bit better quality vitamin, I would certainly advocate for it, because things that you, you know, when you see a whole bunch of FDC colors, when you see a lot of ingredients that you don't, if it was in your food, you wouldn't buy it. I would say the same thing sort of holds true here. That you want to look for vitamins that are more food-based. These tend to be lower potency because it's hard to get higher potency. You have to use really synthetic substances to get high potencies in tablets and capsules. So looking for something that's a bit more food-based, that's lower potency, and that when you get down to the other ingredients, you're not seeing, that's not where you're seeing sugar, and you're not seeing wax, and you're not seeing artificial colors and flavors. So there are good quality products in the marketplace. Many of the mass vitamins that are sold at mass, which are generally really much more inexpensive, they're not very good quality. And yet I would not tell somebody who, you know, if the choice was not to take any supplement and this individual also didn't have a good diet, and I knew that they needed some nutrients, I wouldn't discourage them from taking it. Does that make sense? It's like it's always
very
about
much.
A risk-benefit and trying to meet people where they are at. And much of my career has been working with people who were underserved, you know, healthcare for the homeless, Indian Health Service, et cetera, so places where people may not have had as much money. So I wouldn't take one of those vitamins, and I don't recommend it for most people, but still, we need to shore up deficiencies in individuals because The very fact that something's a vitamin and mineral, other than vitamin D, which can be gotten, you know, from exposure to UV light, these are all nutrients that have to be obtained in the diet because your body can't make them on their own. And so if your diet isn't providing them, you're going to have to take them in a supplement. That's the reality. You have to have them. Your body can't work without them. This is not an option. These are not optional nutrients. They're essential nutrients. And I think that's part of the conversation. You know, when you look at the foods that are, you know, what your great grandparents, what their diet probably looked like around much of the world, and variations on this theme depending upon your ancestry, but we ate a lot of organ meats. I mean, just think about how different the diet was. There was virtually nothing processed. You ate what you could grow and what grew around you in season. And the diet looked just very different than it does today. And one example that might be very, you know, instructive is what happens when we really change our diets dramatically. There's a nutrient called choline, loosely a member of the B family, and choline is vital for us during all of our life. We need it for memory. We need it to make acetylcholine. We need it to make neurotransmitters in the body. It's very important for our health and well-being, but it's particularly important during pregnancy and for the first 3 to 4 years of a child's life. Now, choline, interestingly enough, when the mother has adequate amounts of choline, the baby is somewhat protected from the mother's stress responses. So in a highly stressed pregnancy, the hormones of stress that come to the placenta and the baby is, you know, is reacting to those placental hormones, it actually modulates those stress hormones so that the baby is somewhat protected from highs and lows of the mother's stress chemicals in her body. It also may seem to have a profound effect on babies with Down syndrome, helping them with cognitive development and sort of mitigating some of the adverse consequences of a baby with these chromosomal sort of abnormalities. I am shocked at the data that's coming out at choline of just how important it is in pregnancy and while breastfeeding. But where do you get choline in the diet? You get it primarily from calves' liver, chicken livers, and egg yolks. Now that's really interesting what I said right there. I mean, when I was a kid, my mom fed us liver all the time. I mean, we got liver and onions. She thought it was the best thing ever. We hated it, like most kids. We hated liver. But it's not standard fare on most people's tables anymore. And we went to this big anti-egg, you know, egg whites. Everybody went to egg whites. And we got rid of the yolk, which is where the B12 was, and the protein, and the choline, and the dietary cholesterol, which is good for the brain. I mean, all these kinds of things, and we went away from it. And now we're finding that, you know, choline suboptimal intake is relatively common in pregnant women in the United States. And what's more, it's mandated to be in infant formula because it's so important for the baby's neurocognitive development during the first 3 years of their life. And yet, you know, breastfeeding moms have very low levels of choline in their breast milk in this country. And it's what I tell moms, you can't give what you don't have. You can't give your baby something that you don't have. So this is another one of those areas that choline is hardly in any prenatal supplements, by the way.
And discussed. Right.
It's not ever discussed. And you know, that was another big surprise. I was a midwife before I was a physician, and you know, this data is deeply concerning. It looks like it ameliorates some of the effects of fetal alcohol syndrome when moms have enough choline on board. I'm not saying drink when you're pregnant. I'm saying that some of the reasons fetal alcohol syndrome may not have had the penetrating effects that it did in certain European cultures is because intake of choline was actually quite high. Choline is found in a lot of organ meats as well as in eggs, and this was common fare in many people's diets. A lot of women don't eat eggs. They eat egg whites, and certainly liver is not common in people's diet anymore. And it raises the question, should be choline, should it be more mandatory in prenatal vitamins? And you know, you need 450 milligrams a day, and while you're breastfeeding, you need 550. That's almost impossible to get to without eating liver and egg yolks. I mean, it's just almost impossible. So,
and you know what a big thing, because when I
some of these unintended consequences.
When my children were little, I had a farm. I raised all my own animals, and I would raise my goats myself, slaughter them myself. And when you ate their liver, it was a completely different thing. I mean, it was actually sweet because they were raised with love. They were fed on our own pastures. You know, very, very different from what you might get from, let's say, a commercially raised animal from agribusiness, which is unfortunate, too, because the liver is a detoxifying organ, and it may, in fact, be even higher in some of the toxic chemicals. So it's such an interesting balancing act, how much away from natural, whole natural food that we have moved.
Yeah, it is. It is, and you know, even our soil, an orange today looks very different than an orange from 1950. And people often assume because they're bigger and brighter and we can get them to market faster that somehow they're more nutritious. But actually, you've sacrificed much of the nutritional value when you try to go to market with bigger, faster products, produce. And we found that in six of the big primary essential nutrients, there's a 16 to 38% less nutritional value in six essential nutrients in produce than there was just in 1980. So,
wow, that's a pretty. Well, you, can you say that again slowly so people get that? So
yeah.
Even if they are eating food, what you just said, Dr.
Right.
Lodo, is very important.
Yeah, that's the work out of University of Texas, looking at produce over the last, since 1980s. Now we have, on average, between 16 to 38% less nutrition of the six key essential nutrients found in produce than it was just in the 1980s. So, you know, so now when we used to say, you know, five servings of vegetables and fruits, now we're saying seven. You know, and it's intentional because actually it's not that we're just needing more and more of these nutrients, which may be the case also in a more polluted world. We may actually need more of these phytonutrients that you cannot get in a vitamin. So I want to be clear. I still believe people need to be eating lots of vegetables and fruits. I'm still a strong advocate for that. It's not just the vitamins that are in these produce. It's also all of the phytochemicals and the phytonutrients and all the things that make a plant what it is. But if we're just looking at key nutrients, they're less. And part of this is the soil, but part of this is also just agricultural methods that are trying to get more produce faster and larger to market at the sacrifice of nutritional value. So it's a complicated topic. And of course we want people to be eating great diets. It's just that my experience of sitting with many people that are, you know, highly stressed, working too hard, too long, too many jobs, having difficulty coping, busy home lives as well as busy professional lives. And what often happens then is it's just easier to stop and pick up something quick to take home instead of going home and cooking. It's easier to take something frozen and thaw it and cook it than to cook it from scratch. And clearly when we're stressed, we tend to look for, you know, quick, fast, sugary, fatty carbs. Understandably, I've never met a woman who is deeply stressed who said, oh, my gosh, I'd give anything, you know, for a carrot. That's not, when you're stressed, that's not the kind of food you're looking for. You're looking for things that are more sugary and more carbs and, you know, cookies and brownies and donuts and candy. And so I think that in this stress-laden, caffeine-ridden, overworked, sleep-deprived, you know, population, that there's a reason that our nutrition suffers. And so it's a complex topic. It's a complex topic, and people aren't going to just often change their lives dramatically overnight. And for me, I've had difficulty with helping people change their diet until we sort of got into some of the patterns that drove some of the dietary patterns that they've adopted. What drives you to eat this way? And when you start looking at that, then you can begin to often begin to help with their stress and help with their coping, and then you can begin to help with their diet. I mean, it all begins to fall in place, but just telling somebody they need to eat a bunch of vegetables and fruits, in my experience, they already know that. They already know that, and they're having a hard time. So it's something deeper that you have to get at that gets them to a space where they're willing to sort of embrace that change.
That's so true. And we're going to take another little break here, right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We are talking today with medical doctor Tiarana Lodog, who is an internationally recognized expert in many aspects of holistic living, including her new book, Fortify Your Life. We will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And welcome back once again to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we love to hear from you. I know we have about 150,000 regular listeners who are downloading our podcast. We're so happy that you're doing that. And we'd like to know if we are sharing with you the information that you want to get. So visit naturalnurse.com, send us an email, or Facebook The Natural Nurse, and leave a comment there. And we'd love to address your health issues. We also have many classes, both online and on ground. Go to naturalnurse.com calendar, and you can join in either virtually or in the flesh, and we'd love to say hello to you. Today, we have as our guest Dr. Tiarana Lodog, who's an internationally recognized expert in dietary supplements and integrative medicine. She is also a clinician and educator, and she has been involved in national health policy as well as regulatory issues. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Lodog.
Thank you.
Now, there's a couple things. And there's so much to talk about and so much in your book, Fortify Your Life. But in our last grouping of time here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z today, I'd like to, first of all, honor your recognition of the fact that almost every pharmaceutical drug, like you talked about earlier with your dad, does cause low-grade nutritional deficiencies over time. And what I actually have a whole course that I teach where we look at the fact that the adverse effect profile of those pharmaceuticals often mirrors the deficiency of the nutrient that they cause, which is quite amazing. And one that is probably most well known, I would say, is coenzyme Q10 and its relationship to statin drugs, which interfere with the body's own production of that nutrient. And then when we get things like muscle spasms and muscle weakness, it can be linked to that CoQ10 deficiency. So shouldn't there be more advocacy in terms of, like you said, perhaps automatically giving a very inexpensive thing such as a multiple vitamin or a B vitamin right along with the prescription for a pharmaceutical that depletes it?
Well, you would think so. And it comes back to an earlier, conversation that we had around testing and the fact that probably monitoring for some of these nutrient depletions, especially when they're well established with medication, would be sensible. And whoever's prescribing the medication, the onus really falls upon them to ensure that their patient or their client is getting the adequate nutrients that they need that may be a consequence of the drug that they're prescribing, that being prescribed. You know, and for me, sometimes people are like, well, you're just anti-medication. And I'm like, I am not anti-medication at all. I actually think that, you know, medications are just, many of them are just life-saving. The problem with drugs in general, though, is that they tend to be really, really effective for a relatively small part of the population. But that's not how you make money. You make money by increasing the number of people who you prescribe the drug to. And as you move away from the center, from the people who really benefit from the drug, you get less and less benefit and more risk and adverse effects. So for me, it's trying to recognize that so much of the chronic disease that we see today has a lot of its roots in the way that we live our lives, and that that many times we should be advocating and really, you know, having the time and working together in collaborative teams, so that there's teams of people working together, naturopaths, registered dietitians, case managers, primary care individuals, you know, chiropractors for muscle pain, joint pain, chronic pain, coming together, working in collaborative teams where we can really begin to affect affect change in individuals without always having to rely on medication. But I'm just shocked. CoQ10 is one example, but, you know, B12 with metformin is a huge problem. Imagine how many diabetics have been on metformin, and even though their sugars were stable, 7-8 years later begin to develop these neuropathies, tingling, burning in their feet and that, and then end up on another drug, usually Neurontin, to treat the neuropathy when the problem was very likely B12 deficiency. ACE inhibitors, one of the things that, you know, is notorious with them is that they can alter the sense of taste. Well, okay, but captopril depletes zinc very rapidly. And because nobody checks zinc, nobody's thinking that the taste disturbance is due to, you know, a patient taking an ACE inhibitor, this captopril, for instance. So there's a lot of, I would agree with you, in the back of Fortify Your Life, there's these very lengthy tables with all kinds of medications in them, and the nutrients that are likely to be depleted, but also where maybe there be interactions where you want to take things 4 hours apart from your supplement. But it, you know, I found out that many doctors are using this table in the back, but I've also encouraged patients, if you're on these medications, you know, go talk to an integrated provider. Go talk to somebody who also understands natural medicine and supplements, and talk to them about, you know, should you be tested for these nutritional deficiencies? Because if you're truly depleted, a basic multivitamin may not be enough. Your suggestion about taking the multi or the Bs or taking, you know, something up front when you're prescribed it, that would prevent the deficiency from happening. But if
that is major, isn't it? I mean, such an inexpensive intervention based on scientific fact and things that are known. You can find out what deficiencies a particular pharmaceutical may cause. Very often it's listed in the Merck manual. This is not obscure knowledge.
No, so, and it's published. I mean, the data is published, and you know, the fact that oral contraceptives deplete vitamin B6. Now, I do see sometimes OBGYNs telling their patients to take a B vitamin or to take B6. So that one is, we may have made inroads with a number of OBGYNs who are prescribing oral contraceptives, but many primary care providers prescribing oral contraceptives do not. So again, I think there's a lot of reasons for people to take a basic multivitamin most days, because I think that it can fill in the gaps that we may be getting. And I also think vitamin D at this point, recommending that everybody basically just take a vitamin D supplement, especially with dinner, it's better absorbed with more fat, just makes sense. When you've got 90 million Americans with frank deficiency by anybody's definition, I'd say it's time most people just say, are you taking a vitamin D supplement? And remember, the Endocrine Society says if you're obese, you probably need 2 to 3 times the amount of vitamin D, so to maintain your blood level. So it these are complex topics, but they're really not that complicated, right? So it's complex because human beings are complex creatures living in complex environments. But some of these things are common sense and quite basic. And I'm glad you're out there with your show helping people to sort through this information and help make better decisions for themselves and their family. And certainly that was one of the motivations for writing Fortify Your Life.
Right, and you made a wonderful usable guide that people can actually look things up and bring it with them to their physician. It's written by yourself, who is a physician. It's well-documented and grounded in evidence-based information, and it's a wonderful resource that people can just use as a, you know, take along when they're speaking to their doctor. I'll look it up first because unfortunately, and I know that it's probably a problem because people's doctors are looking at the computer, not them. They don't smell them. They don't touch them. They're trying to get the right code into the computer. It's just
it's
a problem.
True.
But
it's
unfortunately,
true.
We're actually out of
health
time.
Records.
So thank you so much for being our guest today. We have been speaking with Dr. Tirana Lodog about her book, Fortify Your Life. And also, you know, it would be good to go to her website, drlodog.com. That's drlodog.com.